want you to wait." And at that point, words ceased. Antony let out a primitive, guttural cry as he plunged into her, burying himself fully with one long and powerful stroke. Kate's eyes flew wide open, and her mouth formed a little O of surprise at the shock of his swift invasion. But she'd been ready for him, more than ready for him. Something about the relentless pace of his lovemaking had stirred a passion deep within her, until she needed him with a desperation that left her breathless. They weren't delicate, and they weren't gentle. They were hot and sweaty and needy, and they held on to each other as if they could make time last forever by sheer force of will. When they climaxed, it was fiery, and it was simultaneous, both their bodies arching as their cries of release mingled in the night. But when they were done, curled in each other's arms, as they fought for control over their laboured breath, Kate closed her eyes in bliss and surrendered to an overwhelming lassitude. Antony did not. He stared at her as she drifted off, then watched her as she slumbered. He watched the way her eyes sometimes moved under her sleepy eyelids. He measured the pace of her breathing by counting the gentle rise and fall of her chest. He listened for each sigh, each mumble. There were certain memories a man wanted to sear on his brain, and this was one of them. But just when he was sure that she was totally and completely asleep, she made a funny, warm sort of noise as she snuggled more deeply into his embrace, and her eyelids fluttered slowly open. "You're still awake," she murmured, her voice scratchy and mellow with sleep. He nodded, wondering if he was holding her too tightly. He didn't want to let go. He never wanted to let go. "You should sleep," she said. He nodded again, but he couldn't seem to make his eyes close. She yawned. "This is nice." He kissed her forehead, making an sound of agreement. She arched her neck and kissed him back, full on the lips, then settled into her pillow. "I hope we'll be like this always," she murmured, yawning yet again as sleep overtook her. "Always and forever." Antony froze. Always. She couldn't know what that word meant to him. 5 years? 6? Maybe 7 or 8. Forever. That was a word that had no meaning. Something he simply couldn't comprehend. Suddenly he couldn't breathe. The coverlet felt like a brick wall atop him, and the air grew thick. He had to get out of there. He had to go. He vaulted from the bed, and then, stumbling and choking, he reached for his clothes, tossed so recklessly to the floor, and started thrusting his limbs into the appropriate holes. "Antony!" His head jerked up. Kate was pushing herself upright in the bed, yawning. Even in the dim light he could see that her eyes were confused and hurt. "Are you all right?" she asked. He gave her one curt nod. "Then why are you trying to put your leg into the armhole of your shirt?" He looked down and bit off a curse he'd never before even considered uttering in front of a female. With yet another choice expletive, he balled the offending piece of linen into a wrinkled mess and threw it on the floor, pausing for barely a second before yanking his trousers on. "Where are you going?" Kate asked anxiously.
"I have to go out," he grunted.
"Now?"
He didn't answer, because he didn't know how to answer.
"Antony."
She stepped out of bed and reached for him. But a split second before her hand touched his cheek, he flinched, stumbling backward until his back hit the bedpost. He saw the hurt on her face, the pain of his rejection, but he knew that if she touched him in tenderness, he'd be lost.
"Damn it all!" he bit off. "Where the hell are my shirts?"
"In your dressing room," she said nervously. "Where they always are."
He stalked off in search of a fresh shirt, unable to bear the sound of her voice. No matter what she said, he kept hearing "always" and "forever," and it was killing him. When he emerged from his dressing room, coat and shoes on their proper places on his body, Kate was on her feet, pacing the floor and anxiously fidgeting with the wide blue sash on her dressing gown.
"I have to go,"
he said tonelessly. She didn't make a sound, which was what he'd thought he wanted. But instead, he just found himself standing there, waiting for her to speak, unable to move until she did.
"When will you be back?" she finally asked.
"Tomorrow."
"That's good." He nodded.
"I can't be here," he blurted out. "I have to go."
She swallowed convulsively.
"Yes," she said, her voice achingly small. "You've said as much."
And then, without a backward glance and without a clue as to where he was going, he left. Kate walked slowly to the bed and stared at it. Somehow, it seemed wrong to climb in alone, to pull the covers around her and make a little huddle of one. She thought she should cry, but no tears pricked her eyes. So finally she moved to the window, pushed aside the drapes and stared out, surprising herself with a soft prayer for a storm. Antony was gone, and while she was certain he'd return in body, she was not so confident about his spirit, and she realized that she needed something. She needed the storm to prove to herself that she could be strong. By herself and for herself. She didn't want to be alone, but she might not have a choice in that matter. Antony seemed determined to maintain a distance. There were demons within him, demons she feared he would never choose to face in her presence. But if she was destined to be alone, even with a husband at her side, then by God she'd be alone and strong. Weakness, she thought as she let her forehead rest against the smooth, cool glass of her window, never got anyone anywhere. Antony had no recollection of his off-balance stumble through the house, but somehow he found himself tripping down the front steps, made slippery by the light fog that hung in the air. He crossed the street, not having a clue where he was going, only knowing that he needed to be away. But when he reached the opposite pavement, some devil within him forced his eyes upward toward his bedroom window. He shouldn't have seen her, was his rather inane thought. She should have been in bed, or the drapes should have been pulled, or he should have been halfway to his club by now. But he did see her, and the dull ache in his chest grew sharper, more viciously unrelenting. His heart felt as if it had been sliced wide open, and he had the most unsettling sensation that the hand wielding the knife had been his own. He watched her for a minute, or maybe it was an hour. He didn't think she saw him. Nothing in her posture gave any indication that she was aware of his presence. She was too far away for him to see her face, but he rather thought her eyes were closed. "Probably hoping it doesn't storm," he thought, glancing up at the murky sky. She'd most likely be out of luck. The mist and fog were already coalescing into drops of moisture on his skin, and it seemed only a quick transition to out-and-out rain. He knew he should leave, but some invisible cord kept him rooted to the spot. Even after she'd left her position at the window, he remained in place, staring up at the house. The pull back inside was nearly impossible to deny. He wanted to run back into the house, fall to his knees before her and beg her forgiveness. He wanted to sweep her into his arms and make love to her until the first streaks of dawn touched the sky. But he knew he couldn't do any of those things. Or maybe it was that he shouldn't. He just didn't know any more. And so, after standing frozen in place for nearly an hour, after the rain came, after the wind blew gusts of chilly air down the street, Antony finally left. He left, not feeling the cold, not feeling the rain, which had begun to fall with surprising force. He left, not feeling anything. Chapter 21. It has been whispered that Lord and Lady Bridgerton were forced to marry, but even if that is true, this author refuses to believe that theirs is anything but a love match. Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 15th of June, 1814. It was strange, Kate thought, as she looked at the morning repast laid upon the side table in the small dining room, how one could feel utterly famished and at the same time have no appetite. Her stomach was rumbling and churning, demanding food now, and yet everything, from the eggs to the scones to the kippers to the roast pork, looked awful. With a dejected sigh, she reached for a solitary triangle of toast and sank into her chair with a cup of tea. Antony had not come home last night. Kate took a nibble of the toast and forced it down. She'd been hoping that he might at least make an appearance in time for breakfast. She'd delayed the meal as long as she could. It was already nearly 11 in the morning, and she usually ate at 9. But her husband was still absent.
Lady Bridgerton?
Kate looked up and blinked. A footman was standing before her, bearing a small cream-coloured envelope.
"This arrived for you a few minutes ago," he said.
Kate murmured her thanks and reached for the envelope, which had been secured with a neat dollop of pale pink sealing wax. Bringing it closer to her eyes, she made out the initials E-O-B. One of Antony's relations? The E would be Eloise, of course, since all of the Bridgertons had been named in alphabetical order. Kate carefully broke the seal and slipped out the contents. A single piece of paper, neatly folded in half.
"Kate, Antony is here. He looks a wreck. It is, of course, none of my business, but I thought you might like to know. Eloise."
Kate stared at the note a few seconds longer, then shoved her chair back and stood. It was time she paid a call upon Bridgerton House. Much to Kate's surprise, when she knocked at Bridgerton House, the door was swung open not by the butler, but by Eloise, who immediately said,
"That was fast."
Kate looked around the hall, half expecting another Bridgerton sibling or two to jump out at her.
"Were you waiting for me?"
Eloise nodded.
"And you don't have to knock at the door, you know. Bridgerton House belongs to Antony, after all, and you are his wife."
Kate smiled weakly. She didn't feel much like a wife this morning.
"I hope you don't think me a hopeless meddler,"
Eloise continued, linking her arm through Kate's and guiding her down the hall.
"But Antony does look awful, and I had a sneaking suspicion you didn't know he was here."
"Why would you think that?" Kate couldn't help asking.
"Well,"
Eloise said,
"he didn't go to any great pains to tell any of us that he was here."
Kate eyed her sister-in-law suspiciously.
"Meaning?"
Eloise had the grace to blush a faint pink.
"Meaning, that the only reason I know he's here is that I was spying upon him. I don't think my mother even knows he's in residence."
Kate felt her eyelids blink in rapid succession.
"You've been spying upon us?" "No, of course not. But I happened to be up and about rather early this morning, and I heard someone come in, and so I went to investigate, and I saw light coming from under the door in his study."
"How, then, do you know he looks awful?" Eloise shrugged.
"I figured he'd have to emerge eventually to eat or relieve himself, so I waited on the steps for an hour or so."
"Or so?" Kate echoed.
"Or three,"
Eloise admitted.
"It's really not that long when one is interested in one subject. And besides, I had a book with me to while away the time."
Kate shook her head in reluctant admiration.
"What time did he come in last night?" "Around 4 or so."
"What were you doing up so late?" Eloise shrugged again.
"I couldn't sleep. I often can't. I'd gone down to get a book to read from the library. Finally, at around 7, well, I suppose it was a bit before 7, so it wasn't quite 3 hours I waited."
Kate began to feel dizzy.
"He emerged. He didn't head in the direction of the breakfast room, so I can only assume it was for other reasons. After a minute or two, he re-emerged and headed back into his study. Where,"
Eloise finished with a flourish,
"he has been ever since."
Kate stared at her for a good 10 seconds.
"Have you ever considered offering your services to the War Department?"
Eloise grinned, a smile so like Antony's, Kate almost cried.
"As a spy?"
she asked. Kate nodded.
"I'd be brilliant, don't you think?"
"Superb." Eloise gave Kate a spontaneous hug.
I'm so glad you married my brother. Now go and see what is wrong.
Kate nodded, straightened her shoulders, and took a step toward Anthony's study. Turning around, she pointed a finger at Eloise and said,
You will not be listening at the door.
I wouldn't dream of it, Eloise replied.
I mean it, Eloise.
Eloise sighed.
It's time I went up to bed anyway. I could use a nap after staying up all night.
Kate waited until the younger girl had disappeared up the stairs, then made her way to Anthony's study door. She put her hand on the knob, whispering,
Don't be locked,
as she gave it a twist. To her extreme relief, it turned, and the door swung open.
Anthony,
she called out. Her voice was soft and hesitant, and she found she didn't like the sound of it. She wasn't used to being soft and hesitant. There was no reply, so Kate stepped farther into the room. The drapes were tightly closed, and the heavy velvet admitted little light. Kate scanned the room until her eyes fell on the figure of her husband, slouched over his desk, sound asleep. Kate walked quietly across the room to the windows and pulled the drapes part way open. She didn't want to blind Anthony when he woke up, but at the same time, she wasn't going to conduct such an important conversation in the dark. Then she walked back over to his desk and gently shook his shoulder.
Anthony,
she whispered.
Anthony.
His reply was closer to a snore than anything else. Frowning impatiently, she shook a little harder.
Anthony,
she said softly.
Anthony.
He came awake in one sudden movement, an incoherent rush of speech bursting forth as his torso snapped upright. Kate watched as he blinked himself into coherency, then focused on her.
Kate,
he said, his voice hoarse and husky with sleep, and something else, maybe alcohol.
What are you doing here?
What are you doing here? She countered. The last time I checked, we lived nearly a mile away.
I didn't want to disturb you, he mumbled.
Kate didn't believe that for one second, but she decided not to argue the point. Instead, she opted for the direct approach and asked,
Why did you leave last night?
A long stretch of silence was followed by a weary, tired sigh, and Anthony finally said,
It's complicated.
Kate fought the urge to cross her arms.
I'm an intelligent woman,
she said in a purposefully even voice.
I'm generally able to grasp complex concepts.
Anthony didn't look pleased by her sarcasm.
I don't want to go into this now.
When do you want to go into it?
Go home, Kate,
he said softly.
Do you plan to come with me?
Anthony let out a little groan as he raked a hand through his hair. Christ, she was like a dog with a bone. His heart was pounding. His mouth tasted like wool. All he really wanted to do was splash some water on his face and clean his teeth, and here his wife would not stop interrogating him.
Anthony,
she persisted. That was enough. He stood so suddenly that his chair tipped back and slammed into the floor with a resounding crash.
You will cease your questions this instant,
he bit off. Her mouth settled into a flat, angry line. But her eyes. Anthony swallowed against the acidic taste of guilt that flooded his mouth, because her eyes were awash with pain, and the anguish in his own heart grew tenfold. He wasn't ready. Not yet. He didn't know what to do with her. He didn't know what to do with himself. All his life, or at least since his father had died, he'd known that certain things were true, that certain things had to be true. And now Kate had gone and turned his world upside down. He hadn't wanted to love her. Hell, he hadn't wanted to love anyone. It was the one thing, the only thing, that could make him fear his own mortality. And what about Kate? He'd promised to love and protect her. How could he do that, all the while knowing he would leave her? He certainly couldn't tell her of his odd convictions. Aside from the fact that she'd probably think he was crazy, all it would do was subject her to the same pain and fear that racked him. Better to let her live in blissful ignorance. Or was it even better if she didn't love him at all? Anthony just didn't know the answer, and he needed more time. And he couldn't think with her standing there before him, those pain-filled eyes raking his face. And go, he choked out. Just go.
No, she said, with a quiet determination that made him love her all the more. Not until you tell me what is bothering you.
He strode out from behind his desk and took her arm.
I can't be with you right now, he said hoarsely, his eyes avoiding hers. Tomorrow. I'll see you tomorrow, or the next day.
Anthony!
I need time to think.
About what? She cried out.
Don't make this any harder than...
How could it possibly get any harder? She demanded. I don't even know what you're talking about.
I just need a few days, he said, feeling like an echo.
Just a few days to think, to figure out what he was going to do, how he was going to live his life. But she twisted around until she was facing him, and then her hand was on his cheek, touching him with a tenderness that made his heart ache.
Anthony, she whispered, please.
He couldn't form a word, couldn't make a sound. Her hand slipped to the back of his head, and then she was drawing him closer, closer, and he couldn't help himself. He wanted her so damned badly, wanted to feel her body pressed against his, to taste the faint salt of her skin. He wanted to smell her, to touch her, to hear the rasp of her breath in his ear. Her lips touched his, soft and seeking, and her tongue tickled the corner of his mouth. It would be so easy to lose himself in her, to sink down to the carpet, and...
No!
The word was ripped from his throat, and by God, he'd had no idea it was there until it burst forth.
No!
He said again, pushing her away.
Not now.
But...
He didn't deserve her. Not right now. Not yet. Not until he understood how he was meant to live out the rest of his life. And if it meant he had to deny himself the one thing that might bring him salvation, so be it.
Go,
he ordered, his voice sounding a bit more harsh than he'd intended.
Go now. I'll see you later.
And this time she did go. She went without looking back. And Anthony, who'd only just learned what it was to love, learned what it was to die inside. By the following morning, Anthony was drunk. By afternoon, he was hungover. His head was pounding, his ears were ringing, and his brothers, who had been surprised to discover him in such a state at their club, were talking far too loudly. Anthony put his hands over his ears and groaned. Everyone was talking far too loudly.
"Kate boot you out of the house?" Colin asked,
grabbing a walnut from a large pewter dish in the middle of their table and splitting it open with a viciously loud crack. Anthony lifted his head just far enough to glare at him. Benedict watched his brother with raised brows and the vaguest hint of a smirk.
"She definitely booted him out," he said to Colin. "Hand me one of those walnuts, will you?"
Colin tossed one across the table.
"Do you want the crackers as well?"
Benedict shook his head and grinned as he held up a fat, leather-bound book.
"Much more satisfying to smash them."
"Don't," Anthony bit out, his hand shooting out to grab the book.
"Even think about it. Ears a bit sensitive this afternoon, are they?"
If Anthony had had a pistol, he would have shot them both. Hang the noise.
"If I might offer you a piece of advice," Colin said,
munching on his walnut.
"You might not,"
Anthony replied. He looked up. Colin was chewing with his mouth open. As this had been strictly forbidden while growing up in their household, Anthony could only deduce that Colin was displaying such poor manners only to make more noise.
"Close your damned mouth," he muttered.
Colin swallowed, smacked his lips, and took a sip of his tea to wash it all down.
"Whatever you did, apologise for it. I know you, and I'm getting to know Kate, and knowing what I know..." "What the hell is he talking about?"
Anthony grumbled. I think, Benedict said, leaning back in his chair, that he's telling you you're an ass.
Just so,
Colin exclaimed. Anthony just shook his head wearily.
It's more complicated than you think.
It always is, Benedict said, with sincerity so false it almost managed to sound sincere.
When you two idiots find women gullible enough to actually marry you, Anthony snapped, then you may presume to offer me advice. But until then, shut up.
Colin looked at Benedict. Think he's angry? Benedict quirked a brow.
That, or drunk?
Colin shook his head.
No, not drunk. Not any more, at least. He's clearly hungover. Which would explain, Benedict said with a philosophical nod, why he's so angry.
Anthony spread one hand over his face and pressed hard against his temples with his thumb and middle finger.
God above, he muttered. What would it take to get you two to leave me alone?
Go home, Anthony, Benedict said, his voice surprisingly gentle. Anthony closed his eyes and let out a long breath. There was nothing he wanted to do more, but he wasn't sure what to say to Kate. And more importantly, he had no idea how he'd feel once he got there.
Yes, Colin agreed. Just go home and tell her that you love her. What could be more simple?
And suddenly, it was simple. He had to tell Kate that he loved her. Now, this very day, he had to make sure she knew, and he vowed to spend every last minute of his miserably short life proving it to her. It was too late to change the destiny of his heart. He'd tried not to fall in love, and he'd failed. Since he wasn't likely to fall back out of love, he might as well make the best of the situation. He was going to be haunted by the premonition of his own death, whether or not Kate knew of his love for her. Wouldn't he be happier during these last few years if he spent them loving her openly and honestly? He was fairly certain she'd fallen in love with him as well. Surely she'd be glad to hear that he felt the same way. And when a man loved a woman, truly loved her from the depths of her soul to the tips of her toes, wasn't it his God-given duty to try to make her happy? He wouldn't tell her of his premonitions, though. What would be the point? He might suffer the knowledge that their time together would be cut short, but why should she? Better she be struck by sharp and sudden pain at his death than suffer the anticipation of it beforehand. He was going to die. Everyone died, he reminded himself. He was just going to have to do it sooner rather than later. But by God, he was going to enjoy his last years with every breath of his being. It might have been more convenient not to have fallen in love, but now that he had, he wasn't going to hide from it. It was simple. His world was Kate. If he denied that, he might as well stop breathing right now.
I have to go,
he blurted out, standing up so suddenly that his thighs hit the edge of the table, sending walnut shell shards skittering across the tabletop.
I thought you might, Colin murmured.
Benedict just smiled and said,
Go.
His brothers, Anthony realized, were a bit smarter than they let on.
We'll speak to you in a week or so, Colin asked.
Anthony had to grin. He and his brothers had met at their club every day for the past fortnight. Colin's oh-so-innocent query could only imply one thing, that it was obvious that Anthony had completely lost his heart to his wife and planned to spend at least the next 7 days proving it to her, and that the family he was creating had grown as important as the one he'd been born into.
2 weeks, Anthony replied, yanking on his coat. Maybe 3.
His brothers just grinned. But when Anthony pushed through the door of his home, slightly out of breath from taking the front steps 3 at a time, he discovered that Kate was not in.
Where did she go?
He asked the butler. Stupidly, he'd never once considered that she might not be at home.
Out for a ride in the park, the butler replied, with her sister and a Mr. Bagwell. Edwina Suter,
Anthony muttered to himself. Damn. He supposed he ought to be happy for his sister-in-law, but the timing was bloody annoying. He'd just made a life-altering decision regarding his wife. It would have been nice if she'd been home.
Her creature went as well,
the butler said with a shudder. He'd never been able to tolerate what he considered the corgi's invasion into his home.
She took Newton, eh? Antony murmured. I imagine they'll be back within an hour or two.
Antony tapped his booted toe against the marble floor. He didn't want to wait an hour. Hell, he didn't want to wait even a minute.
I'll find them myself, he said impatiently. It can't be that difficult.
The butler nodded and motioned through the open doorway to the small carriage in which Antony had ridden home.
Will you be needing another carriage?
Antony gave his head a single shake.
I'll go on horseback. It'll be quicker.
Very well.
The butler bent into a small bow.
I'll have a mount brought round.
Antony watched the butler make his slow and sedate way toward the rear of the house for about 2 seconds before impatience set in.
I'll take care of it myself, he barked,
and the next thing he knew, he was dashing out of the house. Antony was in jaunty spirits by the time he reached Hyde Park. He was eager to find his wife, to hold her in his arms and watch her face as he told her he loved her. He prayed that she would offer words returning the sentiment. He thought she would. He'd seen her heart in her eyes on more than one occasion. Perhaps she was just waiting for him to say something first. He couldn't blame her if that was the case. He'd made a rather big fuss about how theirs would not be a love match right before their wedding. What an idiot he'd been. Once he entered the park, he made the decision to turn his mount and head over to Rotten Row. The busy path seemed the most likely destination for the threesome. Kate certainly would have no reason to encourage a more private route. He nudged his horse into as fast a trot as he could safely manage within the confines of the park, trying to ignore the calls and waves of greeting that were directed his way by other riders and pedestrians. Then, just when he thought he'd made it through without delay, he heard an aged, female, and very imperious voice call out his name.
"Bridgerton! I say, Bridgerton! Stop at once! I'm speaking to you!"
He groaned as he turned about. Lady Danbury, the Dragon of the Ton. There was simply no way he could ignore her. He had no idea how old she was. 60? 70? Whatever her age, she was a force of nature, and no one ignored her.
"Lady Danbury," he said,
trying not to sound resigned as he reined in his mount.
"How nice to see you."
"Good gad, boy," she barked. "You sound as if you've just taken an antidote. Perk up!"
Antony smiled weakly.
"Where's your wife?"
"I'm looking for her right now," he replied. "Or at least I was."
Lady Danbury was far too sharp to miss his pointed hint, so he could only deduce that she ignored him a purpose when she said,
"I like your wife."
"I like her too.
Never could understand why you were so set on courting her sister. Nice girl, but clearly not for you."
She rolled her eyes and let out an indignant huff.
"The world would be a much happier place if people would just listen to me before they up and got married," she added. "I could have the entire marriage mart matched up in a week."
"I'm sure you could."
Her eyes narrowed.
"Are you patronising me?"
"I wouldn't dream of it,"
Antony said, with complete honesty.
"Good. You always seemed like the sensible sort. I..."
Her mouth fell open.
"What the devil is that?"
Antony followed Lady Danbury's horrified gaze until his eyes fell on an open-topped carriage careening out of control as it rounded a corner on two wheels. It was still too far to see the faces of the occupants, but then he heard a shriek, and then the terrified bark of a dog. Antony's blood froze in his veins. His wife was in that carriage. With nary a word to Lady Danbury, he kicked his horse into motion and galloped full speed ahead. He wasn't sure what he'd do once he reached the carriage. Maybe he'd grab the reins from the hapless driver. Maybe he'd be able to pull someone to safety. But he knew that he could not sit still and watch while the vehicle crashed before his eyes. And yet that was exactly what happened. Antony was halfway to the drunken carriage when it veered off the path and ran up over a large rock, upsetting the balance and sending it tumbling onto its side. And Antony could only watch in horror as his wife died before his eyes. Chapter 22.
Contrary to popular opinion, this author is aware that she is viewed as something of a cynic. But that, dear reader, could not be further from the truth. This author likes nothing better than a happy ending, and if that makes her a romantic fool, so be it.
Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 15th of June, 1814. By the time Antony reached the overturned carriage, Edwina had managed to crawl from the wreckage and was clawing at a mangled piece of wood, trying to open a hole on the other side of the carriage. The sleeve of her dress was torn, and the hem was ragged and dirty, but she seemed not to notice as she tugged frantically at the door. Newton was jumping and squirming at her feet, his barks sharp and frenzied.
"What happened?"
Antony asked, his voice curt and panicked as he leapt from his horse.
"I don't know,"
Edwina gasped, wiping at the streaky tears that ran down her face.
"Mr. Backwell's not such an experienced driver, I think. And then Newton got loose. Then I don't know what happened. One minute we were rolling along, and the next..."
"Where is Bagwell?"
She motioned to the other side of the carriage.
"He was thrown. He hit his head. But he'll be all right. But Kate..."
"What about Kate?"
Antony dropped to his knees as he tried to peer into the wreckage. The entire carriage had overturned, smashing the right side of the vehicle as it had rolled.
"Where is she?"
Edwina swallowed convulsively, and her voice barely rose above a whisper, as she said,
"I think she's trapped beneath the carriage."
In that moment, Antony tasted death. It was bitter in his throat, metallic and hard. It scraped his flesh like a knife, choking and squeezing, pulling the air from his very lungs. Antony yanked viciously at the wreckage, trying to open a wider hole. It wasn't as bad as it had looked during the crash, but that did little to calm his racing heart.
"Kate!"
he yelled, trying to sound calm and unworried.
"Kate, can you hear me?"
The only sound he heard in reply, however, was the frantic whinny of the horses. Damn! He'd have to get them unharnessed and loose before they panicked and started trying to drag the debris.
"Edwina!"
Antony called sharply, looking over his shoulder. She hurried over, wringing her hands.
"Yes?"
"Do you know how to unharness the horses?"
She nodded.
"I'm not very fast, but I can do it."
Antony flicked his head toward the onlookers who were hurrying over.
"See if you can find someone to help you."
She nodded again and quickly got to work.
"Kate!"
Antony yelled again. He couldn't see anyone. A dislodged bench was blocking the opening.
"Can you hear me?"
Still no response.
"Try the other side," came Edwina's frantic voice. "The opening isn't as crushed."
Antony jumped to his feet and ran around the back of the carriage to the other side. The door had already come off its hinges, leaving a hole just large enough for him to stuff his upper body into.
"Kate!"
he called out, trying not to notice the sharp sound of panic in his voice. Every breath from his lips seemed overloud, reverberating in the tight space, reminding him that he wasn't hearing the same sounds from Kate. And then, as he carefully moved a seat cushion that had turned sideways, he saw her. She was terrifyingly still, but her head didn't appear to be stuck in an unnatural position, and he didn't see any blood. That had to be a good sign. He didn't know much of medicine, but he held on to that thought like a miracle.
"You can't die, Kate,"
he said, as his terrified fingers yanked away at the wreckage, desperate to open the hole until it was wide enough to pull her through.
"Do you hear me? You can't die!"
A jagged piece of wood sliced open the back of his hand, but Antony didn't notice the blood running over his skin as he pulled on another broken beam.
"You had better be breathing,"
he warned, his voice shaking and precariously close to a sob.
"This wasn't supposed to be you. It was never supposed to be you. It isn't your time. Do you understand me?"
He tore away another broken piece of wood and reached through the newly widened hole to grasp her hand. His fingers found her pulse, which seemed steady enough to him, but it was still impossible to tell if she was bleeding, or had broken her back, or had hit her head, or had... His heart shuddered. There were so many ways to die. If a bee could bring down a man in his prime, surely a carriage accident could steal the life of one small woman. Anthony grabbed the last piece of wood that stood in his way and heaved, but it didn't budge.
"Don't do this to me," he muttered. "Not now. It isn't her time. Do you hear me? It isn't her time."
He felt something wet on his cheeks and dimly realized that it was tears.
"It was supposed to be me,"
he said, choking on the words.
"It was always supposed to be me."
And then, just as he was preparing to give that last piece of wood another desperate yank, Kate's fingers tightened like a claw around his wrist. His eyes flew to her face, just in time to see her eyes open wide and clear, with nary a blink.
"What the devil?" she asked, sounding quite lucid and utterly awake. "Are you talking about..."
Relief flooded his chest so quickly it was almost painful.
"Are you all right?"
he asked, his voice wobbling on every syllable. She grimaced, then said,
"I'll be fine."
Anthony paused for the barest of seconds as he considered her choice of words.
"But are you fine right now?"
She let out a little cough, and he fancied he could hear her wince with pain.
"I did something to my leg," she admitted. "But I don't think I'm bleeding."
"Are you faint? Dizzy? Weak?"
She shook her head.
"Just in pain. What are you doing here?"
He smiled through his tears.
"I came to find you."
"You did?"
she whispered. He nodded.
"I came to... That is to say, I realized..."
He swallowed convulsively. He'd never dreamed that the day would come when he'd say these words to a woman, and they'd grown so big in his heart he could barely squeeze them out.
"I love you, Kate,"
he said chokingly.
"It took me a while to figure it out, but I do, and I had to tell you. Today."
Her lips wobbled into a shaky smile as she motioned to the rest of her body with her chin.
"You've bloody good timing."
Amazingly, he found himself grinning in return.
"Almost makes you glad I waited so long, eh? If I'd told you last week, I wouldn't have followed you out to the park today."
She stuck out her tongue, which, considering the circumstances, made him love her even more.
"Just get me out," she said.
"Then you'll tell me you love me,"
he teased. She smiled, wistful and warm, and nodded. It was, of course, as good as a declaration, and even though he was crawling through the wreckage of an overturned carriage, even though Kate was stuck in the cursed carriage with what might very well be a broken leg, he was suddenly consumed with an overwhelming sense of contentment and peace. And he realized he hadn't felt that way for nearly 12 years, not since that fateful afternoon when he'd walked into his parents' bedroom and seen his father laid out on the bed, cold and still.
"I'm going to pull you through now,"
he said, sliding his arms beneath her back.
"It'll hurt your leg, I'm afraid, but it can't be avoided."
"My leg already hurts," she said, smiling bravely. "I just want to get out."
Anthony gave her a single, serious nod, then curved his hands around her side and began to pull.
"How is that?"
he asked, his heart stopping every time he saw her wince with pain.
"Fine,"
she gasped, but he could tell she was merely putting up a brave front.
"I'm going to have to turn you,"
he said, eyeing a broken and jagged piece of wood that stuck down from above. It was going to be difficult to manoeuvre her around it. He couldn't care less if he tore her clothing. Hell, he'd buy her 100 new dresses if she'd only promise never again to step into a carriage if it was being driven by anyone other than himself. But he couldn't bear the thought of scratching even an inch of her skin. She'd been through enough already. She didn't need more.
"I need to pull you out head first," he told her. "Do you think you can wiggle yourself around? Just enough so I can grasp under your arms?"
She nodded, gritting her teeth, as she painstakingly turned herself inch by inch, lifting herself up on her hands as she scooted her hips around clockwise.
"There you are,"
Antony said encouragingly.
"Now I'm going to..."
"Just do it,"
Kate ground out.
"You don't need to explain."
"Very well,"
he replied, inching backward until his knees found purchase on the grass. On a mental count of three, he gritted his teeth and began to pull her out, and stopped a second later as Kate let out an ear-splitting scream. If he hadn't been so convinced that he'd die within the next 9 years, he would have sworn she'd just taken 10 off his life.
"Are you all right?"
he asked urgently.
"I'm fine,"
she insisted, but she was breathing hard, puffing through pursed lips, and her face was tense with pain.
"What happened?"
came a voice from just outside the carriage. It was Edwina, done with the horses and sounding frantic.
"I heard Kate scream."
"Edwina?" Kate asked, twisting her neck as she tried to see out.
"Are you all right?"
She yanked on Antony's sleeve.
"Is Edwina all right? Is she hurt? Does she need a doctor?"
"Edwina's fine," he replied. "You need a doctor."
"And Mr. Bagwell?"
"How's Bagwell?"
Antony asked Edwina, his voice curt as he concentrated on manoeuvring Kate around the debris.
"A bump on his head, but he's back on his feet."
"It's nothing. Can I help?"
came a worried male voice. Antony had a feeling that the accident had been as much Newton's fault as Bagwell's. But still, the young man had been in control of the reins, and Antony wasn't inclined to feel charitable toward him just now.
"I'll let you know,"
he said curtly, before turning back to Kate and saying, "Bagwell's fine."
"I can't believe I forgot to ask after them."
"I'm sure your lapse will be pardoned, given the circumstances,"
Antony said, edging farther back until he was nearly entirely out of the carriage. Kate was now positioned at the opening, and it would take only one more, rather long and almost certainly painful, tug to get her out.
"Edwina! Edwina!"
Kate was calling out.
"Are you sure you're not injured?"
Edwina jammed her face into the opening.
"I'm fine,"
she said reassuringly.
"Mr. Bagwell was thrown clear, and I was able to..."
Antony elbowed her out of the way.
"Grit your teeth, Kate,"
he ordered.
"What? I..."
"Ah!"
With one single tug, he freed her completely from the wreckage, both of them landing on the ground, both of them breathing hard. But where Antony's hyperventilation was from exertion, Kate's was obviously from intense pain.
"Good God!"
Edwina nearly yelled.
"Look at her leg!"
Antony glanced over at Kate and felt his stomach drop down clear to his toes. Her lower leg was crooked and bent, and more than obviously broken. He swallowed convulsively, trying not to let his concern show. Legs could be set, but he'd also heard of men who'd lost limbs due to infection and bad medical care.
"What's wrong with my leg?" Kate asked. "It hurts, but... oh, my God!"
"Best not to look," Antony said, trying to tip her chin in the other direction. Her breathing, which was already rapid from trying to control the pain, grew erratic and panicked.
"Oh, my God,"
she gasped.
"It hurts. Didn't realise how much it hurt until I saw..."
"Don't look,"
Antony ordered.
"Oh, my God. Oh, my God." "Kate?"
Edwina asked in a concerned voice, leaning in.
"Are you all right? Look at my leg!"
Kate nearly shrieked.
"Does it look all right?" "I was actually speaking of your face. You look a bit green."
But Kate couldn't reply. She was hyperventilating too hard. And then, with Antony, Edwina, Mr. Bagwell and Newton all staring down at her, her eyes rolled back in her head and she fainted. 3 hours later, Kate was installed in her bed. Certainly not comfortable, but at least in a bit less pain, thanks to the laudanum Antony had forced down her throat the minute they'd gotten home. Her leg had been expertly set by the three surgeons Antony had summoned. Not, as all three surgeons had pointed out, that more than one was needed to set a bone, but Antony had crossed his arms implacably and stared them all down until they'd shut up. and a physician had stopped by to leave several prescriptions that he swore would hasten the bone-knitting process. Antony had fussed over her like a mother hen, second-guessing every move from every doctor, until one of them had actually had the audacity to ask him when he'd received his license from the Royal College of Physicians. Antony had not been amused. But after much haranguing, Kate's leg was set and splinted, and she was told to look forward to at least a month of confinement in bed.
"Look forward?"
she groaned to Antony, once the last of the surgeons had gone.
"How can I look forward to that?"
"You'll be able to catch up on your reading," he suggested.
She let out an impatient exhale through her nose. It was hard to breathe through her mouth while clenching her teeth.
"I wasn't aware I was behind on my reading."
If he'd been tempted to laugh, he did a good job of hiding it.
"Perhaps you could take up needlework," he suggested.
She just glared at him, as if the prospect of needlework were going to make her feel better. He sat gingerly on the edge of her bed and patted the back of her hand.
"I'll keep you company," he said with an encouraging smile. "I'd already decided to cut back on the time I spent at my club."
Kate sighed. She was tired and cranky and in pain, and she was taking it out on her husband, which really wasn't fair. She turned her hand over so that their palms met, and then entwined her fingers through his.
"I love you, you know," she said softly.
He squeezed her hands and nodded, the warmth of his eyes on hers, saying more than words ever could.
"You told me not to," Kate said.
"I was an ass."
She didn't argue. A quirk of his lips told her that he noticed her lack of contradiction. After a moment of silence, she said,
"You were saying some odd things in the park."
Antony's hand remained in hers, but his body pulled back slightly.
"I don't know what you mean," he replied.
"I think you do," she said softly.
Antony closed his eyes for a moment, then stood, his fingers trailing through her grasp, until finally they were no longer touching at all. For so many years, he'd been careful to keep his odd convictions to himself. It seemed best. Either people would believe him and then worry, or they wouldn't and then think him insane. Neither option was particularly appealing. But now, in the heat of one terrified moment, he'd blurted it out to his wife. He couldn't even remember exactly what he'd said, but it had been enough to make her curious, and Kate wasn't the sort to let go of a curiosity. He could practice all the avoidance he wanted, but eventually she'd get it out of him. A more stubborn woman had never been born. He walked to the window and leaned against the sill, gazing blankly in front of him, as if he could actually see the streetscape through the heavy burgundy drapes that had long since been pulled shut.
"There is something you should know about me," he whispered.
She didn't say anything, but he knew she'd heard. Maybe it was the sound of her changing her position in bed. Maybe it was the sheer electricity in the air. But somehow he knew. He turned around. It would have been easier to speak his words to the curtains, but she deserved better from him. She was sitting up in bed, her leg propped up on pillows, her eyes wide and filled with a heartbreaking mix of curiosity and concern.
"I don't know how to tell you this without sounding ridiculous," he said.
"Sometimes the easiest way is just to say it," she murmured.
She patted an empty spot on the bed.
"Do you want to sit beside me?"
He shook his head. Proximity would only make it that much more difficult.
"Something happened to me when my father died," he said.
"You were very close to him, weren't you?"
He nodded.
"Closer than I'd ever been to anyone. Until I met you."
Her eyes glistened.
"What happened?"
"It was very unexpected," he said.
His voice was flat, as if he were recounting an obscure news item, and not the single most disturbing event of his life.
"A bee, I told you."
She nodded. Who would have thought a bee could kill a man? Antony said with a caustic laugh. It would have been funny if it weren't so tragic. She didn't say anything, just looked at him with a sympathy that made his heart break. I stayed with him throughout the night, he continued, turning slightly so that he would not have to look into her eyes. He was dead, of course, but I needed a little more time. I just sat beside him and watched his face. Another short burst of angry laughter escaped his lips. God, what a fool I was! I think I half expected him to open his eyes at any moment.
I don't think that's foolish, Kate said softly. I've seen death, too. It's hard to believe that someone is gone when he looks so normal and at peace.
I don't know when it happened, Antony said, but by morning I was sure.
That he was dead? She asked.
No, he said roughly. That I would be too.
He waited for her to comment. He waited for her to cry, to do anything. But she just sat there staring at him with no perceptible change of expression until finally he had to say,
I'm not as great a man as my father was.
He might choose to disagree, she said quietly.
Well, he's not here to do that, is he? Antony snapped.
Again she said nothing. Again he felt like a heel. He cursed under his breath and pressed his fingers against his temples. His head was starting to throb. He was starting to feel dizzy, and he realized that he couldn't remember the last time he'd eaten.
It's my judgment to make, he said in a low voice. You didn't know him.
He sagged against a wall with a long, weary exhale, and said,
Just let me tell you. Don't talk, don't interrupt, don't judge. It's hard enough to get it out as it is. Can you do that for me?
She nodded. Antony took a shaky breath.
My father was the greatest man I've ever known. Not a day goes by when I don't realize that I'm not living up to his standards. I knew that he was everything to which I could aspire. I might not ever match his greatness, but if I could come close, I'd be satisfied. That's all I ever wanted, just to come close.
He looked at Kate. He wasn't sure why. Maybe for reassurance, maybe for sympathy, maybe just to see her face.
If there was one thing I knew, he whispered, somehow finding the courage to keep his eyes focused on hers, it was that I would never surpass him, not even in years.
What are you trying to tell me? She whispered. He shrugged helplessly.
I know it makes no sense. I know I can offer no rational explanation. But since that night when I sat with my father's dead body, I knew I couldn't possibly live any longer than he had.
I see, she said quietly.
Do you?
And then, as if a dam had burst, the words poured forth. It all gushed out of him. Why he'd been so dead set against marrying for love. The jealousy he'd felt when he'd realized that she'd managed to fight her demons and win. He watched as she brought one of her hands to her mouth and bit the end of her thumb. He'd seen her do that before, he realized, whenever she was disturbed or deep in thought.
How old was your father when he died? She asked.
38.
How old are you now?
He looked at her curiously. She knew his age, but he said it anyway.
29.
So, by your estimation, we have 9 years left.
At most.
And do you truly believe this?
He nodded. She pursed her lips and let out a long breath through her nose. Finally, after what felt like an endless silence, she looked back up at him with clear, direct eyes and said,
Well, you're wrong.
Oddly enough, the straightforward tone of her voice was rather reassuring. Antony even felt one corner of his mouth lift up in the palest of smiles.
You think I'm unaware of how ludicrous it all sounds?
I don't think it sounds ludicrous at all.
It sounds like a perfectly normal reaction, actually, especially considering how much you adored your father. She lifted her shoulders in a rather self-aware shrug as her head tipped to the side. But it's still wrong. Anthony didn't say anything.
Your father's death was an accident, Kate said.
An accident. A terrible, horrible twist of fate that no one could have predicted.
Anthony shrugged fatalistically.
I'll probably go the same way.
Oh, for the love of...
Kate managed to bite her tongue a split second before she blasphemed.
Anthony, I could die tomorrow as well. I could have died today when that carriage rolled on top of me.
He paled.
Don't ever remind me of that.
My mother died when she was my age,
Kate reminded him harshly. Did you ever think of that? By your laws, I should be dead by my next birthday.
Don't be...
Silly,
she finished for him. Silence reigned for a full minute. Finally, Anthony said, his voice barely above a whisper,
I don't know if I can get past this.
You don't have to get past it,
Kate said. She caught her lower lip, which had begun to tremble, between her teeth, and then laid her hand on an empty spot on the bed.
Could you come over here so I can hold your hand?
Anthony responded instantly. The warmth of her touch flooded him, seeping through his body until it caressed his very soul. And in that moment, he realized that this was about more than love. This woman made him a better person. He'd been good and strong and kind before, but with her at his side, he was something more. And together they could do anything. It almost made him think that 40 might not be such an impossible dream.
You don't have to get past it, she said again, her words blowing softly between them. To be honest, I don't see how you could get completely past it until you turn 39. But what you can do...
She gave his hand a squeeze, and Anthony somehow felt even stronger than he had.